All right, so welcome back to part two of my discussion, I guess, or just my thoughts on Beauty and the Beast, the live-action remake from Disney, released last Friday. So let's just jump right back into it. So I left off talking about the diversity in this Disney movie and how it was severely lacking and how Disney doesn't understand diversity. And one thing I didn't touch upon is the gay moment in this movie. So once again, having LeFou as a gay character isn't really the representation that the LGBT community wants. And it's a shame because, like, if they really had to put that in there, fine, put it in there, but make it a different character. Make it Lumiere and Cogsworth, who in the original film, like, their chemistry is amazing. Like, it's fantastic watching them. Their back and forth dialogue, it's so funny, and you could see them being gay, or at least like one of like Lumiere being bisexual and Cogsworth being gay. And I'm not alone in that sentiment. A lot of people feel that way. So Disney could have done this, but they didn't because it's Disney and they're afraid. So they're like, what's the safest option? Oh, we'll make it the character nobody really likes. But then we'll make the character sort of question his morality, not like in the original film, give him more depth. And like, okay, that's fine, but like, it's a movie called Beauty and the Beast, not Gaston and LeFou. That is something we don't need to focus on. You're adding too much to a story. Like, there's a great podcast. I will link to it in the description, the specific episode that I'm talking about. And it's on all the Pixar films, up to, I believe, Brave. And it basically is two literary people sitting down talking about the Pixar movies. And going into this podcast, I remember I was so wide-eyed and optimistic, like, oh, this is going to be great. They're going to love all these movies. I'm so excited. I can't wait for them to break them down and say why they're so amazing. And then they got to my favorite movie, and that was Toy Story 2. And I was listening, and I was like, oh, I can't wait for them to break this down and say how amazing it is. And right away, they were like, we love this movie, but it's not very good. And I'm like, what? Why? And then by the end of the podcast, I was like, my life has been changed forever. And something they talked about in Toy Story 2 that I notice a lot in movies today is a subject they call jazz hands. And basically what jazz hands are is, I mean, you know what jazz hands are. It's when you put your hands in front of your like face or your body and sort of wave them back and forth fast. And but they have no real anything to them. They're just there. They just exist, but they don't add anything. They don't contribute anything to whatever it is you're seeing the story. And Toy Story 2 apparently has a lot of jazz hands that distract you from the main story. And I think that Beauty and the Beast had a lot of jazz hands. From LeFou to the mother plotline to the Enchantress trying to be more a part of the story. It just didn't work. A 2-hour runtime isn't going to give you the results that you want. A TV show might, like a mini series, but Disney's not going to do that. And Disney, again, they don't take risks. People act like they do, but they don't. Frozen was not a risk. Disney is a part of culture, and when culture changes, Disney changes with it. That's why we had something like Snow White in 1937, I believe it came out, or 1941. I always get that confused with Wizard of Oz. 1940 something, 1930 something, I don't remember, but that's why we had Snow White then, and that's why we have Frozen now, because views of women have changed. You didn't see a movie like Frozen in the 1950s. Why? Because Disney wouldn't do that. Disney moves with culture. If you've ever bought into the idea that Disney is changing things and Disney is, you know, the leader of the change in social movements and social justice, you will be seriously mistaken, at least in their films. What they do outside of their films, like with the theme parks and stuff, it's a little different. But again, Disney's a very tame company, and they're not spearheading this like championing the good guy, okay? Like, they're a part of culture, and they move along with culture, and that is literally it. They're not doing anything innovative. The only thing that's innovative is what they're making now compared to what they made yesterday, which is fine for a company to do, but don't praise them for what they're not doing, which is spearheading the way to a new and diverse world and an accepting world, because they're not doing that. And let's talk about the subplot of the mothers. The movie tried to, because it's always been a question of who's Belle's mom, what happened to her? And so the movie tries to sort of bring this in and sort of make Belle curious about her mother, and she doesn't know what happened to her. She just knows that she died and her dad can't talk about it. And then you hear that the Beast loved his mother, but she died too, and his dad was evil, and they can bond because of their mothers, I guess, and they sort of try to do this with this really weird and stupid time travel, or not time travel, but like, the Beast has this book from the Enchantress where you can go anywhere you want, and so Belle goes to her childhood home, and it's like, oh my gosh, I remember what happened. And it shows her, and she's like a freaking baby. It's like, you don't remember what happened, you weirdo. And then she reunites with her dad, and she's like, I know what happened to Mother. She died from a plague. Why didn't you tell me? And the dad's like, oh, it was too hard. Like, I was afraid. What do you mean you were afraid to tell your daughter that her mom died from a plague? What is wrong with you? Like, it's a plague. It's not like she was eaten by wolves or you had a traumatic experience. Like, I know the plague itself was a traumatic experience, but like, Disney, come up with something better than that to say that to justify why the dad would not tell Belle this. She was a freaking baby and she is a grown ass woman. Like, this makes no sense. And I had a feeling this would happen. I love when movies try to be all deep and dark and mysterious and so like profound and epic. It's like, this is not epic. This is just stupid. Like, I was honestly like baffled when he was saying to her, I just couldn't tell you. You couldn't tell your daughter that her mom died from the plague. Alrighty. Whatever. And then, again, for the more jazz hands, the Enchantress, they try to make her a character named Agatha, where she helps Belle's father, and she's in the final shot, which ruins the transformation shot, by the way. We don't need her there. She was an unnecessary plot point. We don't need her. And she's just there, and it's like, oh, this random woman's here. Oh, the Enchantress is here. She's a good person after all. So they tried to make it like a plot hole, but it's... The original movie, The Enchantress, being a jerk is not a plot hole. In fact, that's what I love about the original movie. I think it sort of leaves it up to the viewer, sort of unintentionally by the creators, but nonetheless, because it gives depth to the film. It gives, like, this mystery that is sort of necessary. When it's giving us all the answers, suddenly the movie becomes, again, watered down and just not as interesting. Showing us the Enchantress the way they did, like, it's kind of nice to wonder what she looks like and how she appears. And showing us what she looked like is like, oh, that's her. Okay. Another part of this movie that very much bugged me was the cinematography and the editing. As I said, the movie moves really fast, and there's really no room to breathe between scenes. But it goes further than that. The editing of this movie, like, once again, professional filmmakers, like, they're not dumb. And sometimes I question this because they kind of act like they're dumb. They know how to light a scene. They know how to do certain things. They know how to make a scene look good. And as I was watching this movie, I couldn't help but think, why didn't they make this look good? Now, there were some shots that were absolutely gorgeous, but probably for half of this movie, or maybe a little under half, I'm not sure, there were a lot of scenes that took place in dark places. And you know what? That's great that a movie is really dark. I love dark movies, but I think this movie fell for the same thing that the Harry Potter films fell for later in their run, which was, it was too dark. Like, literally too dark. I could not see what was going on. And I thought, well, maybe it was just the theater, and so I watched some clips of it, and no, it's still freaking dark. Like, you can make a movie dark and still tell what's going on. Like, because I understand if there's a movie, like, where you're, like, you want it to be dark so that the audience can't see because you want to make them afraid as well. But, like, this is a remake. We know what's happening. We don't need it to be dark. This is a Disney movie. And you're making it dark to the point, like, where you know something's going on in front of you, and you can sort of see it, and you can make it out, and you can say, oh, this is what's going on. But you still have to, like, really strain to see. Like, when Maurice goes into the castle, like, and he's exploring, it's like, I was so frustrated by how dark it was. And, like, the Beast, he's such an iconic character. When he comes into the shot, you can't really see him. Like, in the original movie, like, again, like, I don't even know how to say it. Like, it's just very frustrating how dark it was. And I stop because I don't want to talk about the original film. I don't want to, I keep bringing that up and I shouldn't be. I'll just say that the Beast is an iconic character. And yes, make him more fearful, but we live in a much different age now where we're exposed to films before we even see them. And so it's been a long time since we have seen what the Beast looks like. So it's a shame that this movie didn't take that into account, because there's no mystery there. There's no, we know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know. Not only that, but the cinematography, they did these spinning shots. They're trying to make them real epic, but they made me feel more sick than anything, which I'm not the type of person who gets sick from spinny things. I'm probably the last person who would be like that. And yet I felt sick watching. I was like, Are you kidding me? Like, this is ridiculous. There were even moments, not many, but a few, of shaky cam. And I'm like, okay. I get bothered when people criticize the first Hunger Games, because the shaky cam is something I very much enjoy, because I believe it's supposed to be mirroring Katniss's perspective of, like, you really don't know what's going on. Like, you're just moving so fast that, like, everything is just so convoluted and crazy, and that's why I really like the shaky cam in the first Hunger Games movie. But this is Beauty and the Beast, okay? Knock it off. Like, so dumb. Lots of little things. Beast does not give Belle the library, which, what? Why didn't you give her the library? Like, that's, like, an important part. Okay, I'm just gonna bring up the first movie, the original, fuck it. This is an important part of the film. Why did you do that? Like, and it's like, is it a feminist thing? Like, because that's not what feminism looks like. Like, Emma Watson, I'm disappointed. Like, I love Emma Watson. I think she is, like, a genuine, like, her idea of feminism is so honest and, like, true. And I see this and I'm like, he can give you a library. It's okay. Like, I don't understand. But that also reminds me that at the end of the film, or not the end, but the Beast never says, I love you, or I love her. This movie, decided that when the Beast let Belle go, to go to her father, it decided that instead of having the Beast tell the objects, like, why did you let her go? And he says, because I love her. Instead, he says, nothing. And Mrs. Potts says, because he loves her. And I'm like, what the... Mrs. Potts, shut up! Like, why are you talking? This should be the Beast's moment. Why? Who made this decision? And speaking of the objects, this movie tried to, like, one, like, the Beauty and the Beast, the original, is not a perfect movie. It is perfect in its plot. Like, it's very tight. But in terms of character, there is a lot lacking, especially for the objects, because they're just overly happy to be in the position that they're in. If I were that object, I'd be really pissed off that the prince did this to me and that I was under the spell because of him. And, like, that doesn't seem to be the case with any of them. And except in the sequel, which is kind of embarrassing. But, you know, this movie tried to give them more depth and say why they're so happy all the time. And also tried, like, because it's hope. Oh, hope can do that. I'm like, it tried to give the characters more screen time and more depth and for us to care for them more. But why is it that I care for them more in the original movie? In this one, I was just like, no. Like, the transformation scene at the end is about the beast. It is not about anybody else. And this movie, again, I give credit for trying to do that. Like, that makes sense. But that's not the type of movie we're watching. You gave us too much, Disney. And we're watching this, and we're watching the characters transform into these objects permanently. And, like, that's another thing. Belle, the last petal falls, and she does not say I love you before it. And the movie seems to justify this by being like, well, the Enchantress is here now, so she knows. But, like, that's not how it works. You have to fall in love before the last petal falls. You both have to say I love you. Which, technically, he hasn't. So, what? Like, oh my gosh, this movie. And, like, a little other plot holes they tried to fix were, like, the 10 years we've been rusting line. Which, like, again, I don't think is a plot hole. Like, I think it's kind of cool that the prince will be cursed at the age of 10. I think that's awesome. Like, it's really dark and mysterious. It's not a plot hole, it's a mistake. Because in the beginning with the stained glass, the prince is an adult. And that's the mistake on Disney's part in the original animated movie. But it is not a plot hole. It's a mistake. It's just frustrating. But they did fix that line, so I respect them on that count. At the end of the movie, also, after his transformation, they focus on his eyes, and I'm like, that's the first time we've really focused on his eyes. Like, have we at all during this movie? I don't think we have. So, not important. What the hell? And what else? What else? As I said with the whole feminism thing, they try to make Belle, like, the stronger female character, which always frustrates me, because as a writer, as a creator, I get very frustrated by the idea that a woman has to do certain things to qualify as a strong female character. I understand, like, why a certain character, like maybe Bella Swan or Snow White, are not strong female characters. And there's a basic understanding to that, but it's not because of what they do. To me, it's because of the way they're executed. You can make a character who's passive and still make them a good character. Give them a lot of depth. Give them something. Like, there are characters who are very passive in books and films who maybe would be blind or deaf, who can't speak. Two I can think of. I just read the book All the Light We Cannot See. There's a girl who's blind. She would be passive because she can't see, so she depends on other people to do things for her. But actually, she's very, even though she's passive, she also has this, like, proactive nature to her, proactive thoughts, proactive being. That's a good character. Even though she's passive, she's given an active personality and an active role in the story. Same with thinking of Edgar Sawtell, the story of Edgar Sawtell. That character cannot speak, but yet the book gives him motivation. It gives him an intention. It gives him action. And even though he's passive, he can still move forward. And I know it's a guy, so it's not the same, but still, he's a character. What I want to see in a movie is a girl who is a character, who has flaws, and who is good, but also bad, who has motivations. And, like, Belle in this movie, I don't think it was bad that they had her trying to be proactive and escape. Like, that was a nice touch, but, like, you just lost your father. Think about the motivations of Belle, who just lost her father, who never knew her mother, who is being separated from that. Like, no crying at all. Like, that is harsh. And there's a part where, like, the Beast looks in the mirror and says, show me the girl. And it shows her looking all sad and blue, and that was it. I'm like, oh, Disney. This is going on a little longer than the last episode, but I don't have much more to say, so I'm just going to continue. So anyway, what else do I want to say? I would rather just have a well-rounded character, a good character. And Disney, I don't think Disney will ever be able to give us that with how they execute their product. It won't happen. I'd rather Belle be a human being and not be a superwoman. I'm glad, again, that they did that. Like, it's nice to see her being active, but, like, she tricks her father, and then she, like, throws him out of the dungeon. And I'm like, Belle, that is brutal. Like, she basically, like, I don't know, I'm really hard-pressed. I really like the original. I'm sorry, I really love original Belle. I think she's badass, and I think it's nice to see her be so strong and yet feel so powerless. Like, when she's trapped like that. Like, that is really hard for any person. And it's nice to see her crying, but also have this idea that, like, she is being loyal to her word, that she's saving her father's life. Like, there's no sort of understanding of that in this film. And again, it's also because of how fast everything moves. It's just not very good. Little things, the objects, they don't look that good. They look okay, but not good. And I think it would be very hard for people to, for anybody to design those. So I get that, but they don't look good. The beast doesn't look that good. There's an emotional distance between him and Belle. The chemistry's just not there. Again, like the trailer, I thought brought the chemistry, but the film itself, it was kind of a wonder how these two characters end up together, especially because they changed Belle in certain ways that you're like, yeah, she wouldn't put up with this shit. Because if you look at the Beauty and the Beast story, it is a sort of, oppressive story about a man, you know, taking over a woman, having her fall for Stockholm Syndrome. And my defense for the Stockholm Syndrome thing in the original is that the Beast lets Belle go. He says he loves her, and she comes back on her own accord and then says I love you to him. And that does happen in this movie, but again, he doesn't say I love you out loud. Mrs. Potts does. And there's an emotional disconnect in this movie. In the original film, the Beast does have a softness to him that you can see. The animators did a really good job with that. In this movie, his eyes are very small. And I think if you had given us, you know, bigger eyes, more clear, I think it would have been better. So, yeah, it just would have been a bit stronger. I didn't like Bill Condon before this. I don't like him now. Sorry, I think he's a terrible filmmaker. If he makes a good film one day, great. I look forward to that day. But this movie was not good. The Twilight movies that he worked on were not good. You know, dude, like, it's just, out of all the directors they could have chosen, they chose this one. To me, this was the movie's downfall. And the biggest downfall was the direction. And it's a shame. As I said, trailer's better than the movie. You want to see it, watch that. I think a lot of criticisms that people are giving this is that it was too like the original. And I don't think that criticism is wrong, but I don't think it's right either. They changed a lot. And I thought about it and I was like, what could they have done? Because it did still seem very familiar to the original. So I thought, what could they have done? Like, because all they did is they're like, well, cut out this part of dialogue and then add a little bit here and maybe switch these two around. Like, that's their changes. I'm like, that's not changing things. I mean, it is, but like, do something better, Disney. Justify this remake by doing something better. Don't make it a musical. I think this movie could have been so much better if you got rid of Bill Condon and not make it a musical. And I'm actually kind of sad. I just was reading, like, Stephen Chbosky wrote this script, and I'm like, Chbosky, dude, why? Like, he screwed it up. It's not good. Like, it's a bad movie. Like, why? But anyway, yeah, if it wasn't a musical, I think it would have been a lot stronger, and it would have been different, and it would have been at least, like, okay, Disney, at least you tried. But they didn't. One final thing. They inserted a lot of modern dialogue into this. Gaston, after he's talking to Maurice, who says something crazy, LeFou says, you really want to marry into this family? Belle is reading Shakespeare, Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, to be more specific, and when the Beast finds this out, he shakes his head and says, of course you would like romance or something like that. And it's like, what, because I'm a girl? Like, you gonna do some mansplaining to me, Beast? What the heck? And then in the same exact scene, Belle says, you know Shakespeare? And he's like, I've had an expensive education. I'm like, that wasn't a thing. Like, nobody would say that. And then at the end of the movie, Belle's like, thinking about growing a beard. I'm like, oh, please. Such a hipster. Like, shut up. And then, like I said, lyrics added to the song that added nothing. Like, Howard Ashman, he's the man, and I think he'd be rolling over in his, like, tossing in his grave. Like, Poor guy. I did like the song Evermore, though. I'm not quite sure how good it is, but my heart tells me that it's amazing. I really enjoy it. That's basically the end of it. That's the end of my thoughts on Beauty and the Beast. I'm not sure if I have more, but I think I caught everything that I wanted to talk about. So, yes, I'm not going to say I was disappointed by this movie. It sort of lived up to my expectations of everything I heard about it, everything I saw, everything I knew about Disney remakes and sequels. It's no surprise to me that this is the product we got. I won't say it wasn't an enjoyable experience. I had a lot of fun. I'll probably watch the movie again. Probably won't buy it on Blu-ray, but we'll rent it from the library. So, you know, what is disappointing to me is that Disney just can't... They don't listen to their audience. And somebody could say that's a flawed statement to make, because there is an audience that actually really enjoys this movie, especially, like, Disney fans. Like, most of the good reviews I've seen are actually from Disney fans, which is very surprising to me. But then again, all the bad reviews are also from Disney fans, so it's just sort of a toss-up. It is a subjective statement, but I truly think that, you know, this movie could have done so much better, and it just really let us down in pretty much all ways possible. But, you know, what can you do? So, in conclusion, that's it for me. Hope you liked listening to my thoughts on Beauty and the Beast and watching my gameplay of Kingdom Hearts, I'm sure. I never know what game I'm going to be playing. So, with that being said, if you like what you heard and want to hear more, hit that subscribe button, hit that like, that thumbs up. So, you know, that lets me know that somebody's paying attention, that somebody likes what I'm doing. And while you're at it, head over to my website, keepcalmreadon.com. You can find a ton more content besides books and video games. I post a lot of blogs. I'm doing a project A Year of Fake Books, and I post blogs like According to Fiction. I will be writing my own Beauty and the Beast story in the fall of this year, so you can look forward to that. And if you maybe are busy and want to listen to this show on the road or while you're doing things, there is an audio version. Subscribe on iTunes and or Podomatic. The links will be in the description. And of course, follow me on social media for any information from me or new updates. That's it for me, and I will talk to you all later. And remember, having fun isn't hard as long as you have a library card.